It's Saturday, the 23rd of January, 2016. Happy birthday to Haywood Workman. Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Sedevo. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Sedevo, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and it's that simple. You become a sponsor of the podcast for one day. Also, big thanks to Moneyball.com.au for being the sponsor of the podcast this season. Go ahead and check out Moneyball if you're living in Australia or New Zealand. They are our best daily fantasy sports site, so check them out, enter some contests, win some money. Before we get into the usual rundown of the podcast and all that sort of stuff that happens, two big things happened in the NBA. I woke up, time difference obviously here in Australia, woke up Saturday morning, which is Friday afternoon for you guys in the States, and shit was going down everywhere. Josh Smith had been traded, which was weird enough in itself. The Rockets sent the draft rights of Marty, that's Marty with two A's, Lunin to the Clippers, and the Clippers then sent back Cash and Serhii Lishchuk, guys who were basically never going to play in the NBA. So basically, the Clippers have said, well, Josh, it's not happening, we'll give you out for nothing. And the Rockets said, fine, we'll take Smith back for nothing. A couple of things that this means to me is Donatas Motiejunas is back, he is not good. He's probably going to be missing extended periods of time. It also means that Terrence Jones is not good. We already know that. And the Clint Capela power forward experiment has been okay at times, but they want someone else there. Now, what do we do with Josh Smith from a fantasy point of view? He was really valuable in a backup role for the Rockets last season in head-to-head leagues, because as we saw in his first game back for the Rockets, he was 1 of 10 from the field and he was 0 of 2 from the free throw line. He was fantastic in the other areas, like amazingly good. And you could use all those numbers that he put up. 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. Incredible. 1 of 10 from the field, 0 of 2 from the free throw line. 2 points, they're not so good. So if your team is set up with a punt percentages sort of look, Smith is going to have some value. And he did have value in a bench role last year. It's not going to be massive, though. He's not going to be, let's run out and make sure we own Josh Smith in every league. It's not going to be that sort of situation. But he's going to play this sort of 20-minute role, I would imagine. When Dwight Howard comes back and Terrence Jones doesn't log 32 minutes and Clint Capela's not playing 24 minutes, Smith's minutes will come down 18, 15, something along those lines. It can still be useful, but I don't think that in a 12-team league he's going to be a must-add or anything like that. I haven't gone and added him anywhere. And I don't think that at this point, hey, if you've got some rubbish on your bench and you want to drop, add him, and maybe if you think he's going to demand the starting power forward job. I just don't think he's that guy anymore. He's just not good anymore, Josh Smith. He has talents and he has abilities, but he's just not good enough, and it's going to have to fit certain teams, and you're going to need to be willing to take that risk that assumes he's going to play a 25, 26-minute role to become useful in standard leagues. I'm just not sure that's going to be the case. Could be. Not really certain that it will be. The other thing that happened, David Black got fired. Such a weird situation to me, the Blatt firing. If you haven't had a chance, check out Adrian Wojnarowski's article about the whole situation in Cleveland and LeBron and Rich Paul and the agency and them wanting Mark Jackson, which is ludicrous to me. Jackson was a horrible coach and a horrible manager of things, and the stories that come out about him and the stories that people allude to that they can't actually tell. It seemed like he was a ridiculous coach with the Warriors. That would be a bad choice. Ty Lue is now the coach of the Cavs for the next 3 seasons. This could change some things in Cleveland. A couple of things that I'm looking out for is what happens at center. Timofey Mozgov, Tristan Thompson. Does Ty Lue change it? Does Thompson get back into the starting lineup and play 30-plus minutes again? Does Mozgov get banished to the bench? These are things to watch. What happens on the wing? Does Mo Williams come back into the rotation at the expense of Matthew Dellavedova? That's possible. J.R. Smith, Iman Shumpert, who plays the minutes there? There's a few things to watch out for to see if there's any changes that happen. They're not going to have massive impacts in fantasy, but deeper league players are going to have to pay attention, because Dellavedova was really valuable in 14-team leagues. So Shumpert, Yeah, Mozgov and Thompson, all those guys, in one of those, Thompson or Mozgov, one of them can become a must-own 12-team league guy if they play big minutes. Probably not Thompson because his skill set's limited, but they could become guys to pay attention to depending on what Lou wants to do. It could change. Or you know, J.R. Smith might go back to a bench role and play 24 minutes and Shumpert plays 32 minutes as the starting shooting guard. Or Mo Williams plays 25 minutes splitting between the one and the two. We don't know how it's going to work out. It's definitely going to need to see how the Cavs play today and what sort of changes they make, if any, to the rotation with Lou in charge. But the whole Blatt situation was odd. They'd just beaten the Clippers very comprehensively. Obviously, in a turmoil. Read the Wojnarowski piece. It's very insightful into what happens in the organization. You know, GM David Griffin was very adamant that LeBron wasn't consulted on this decision at all, but he didn't need to be consulted on this decision. His feelings were pretty clear from the beginning that he didn't want David Blatt coaching, and Blatt will be a coach at some point in the NBA in the near future. I'm pretty confident of that. They're the two things that I woke up to this morning. There's going to be more of those things happening, I reckon, over the next few weeks, just odd things that I wake up to go, really? That happened? Cool, so two weird things went down. That's it for that now. Let's move into the usual scheduled programming of the podcast.
The monstrous line of the night.
The monstrous line of the night once again goes to Steph Curry. As you can see, well, maybe you can't see because you're listening to this audio in an audio format. If you're watching the video, you can see that I'm wearing my Steph Curry jersey. And Steph Curry is the monstrous line of the night. He was bananas again. 39, 10 and 12, 8 triples, including one that was waved off as a buzzer beater at the end of the first quarter, a half-court shot. He then proceeded to hit another half-court buzzer-beating shot at the end of the second quarter, which counted. Had a steal. He went 11 of 19 from the field. He went 9 of 9 from the free throw line. He also only had 2 turnovers. He is back in business after that sort of mini slump where he had that bruised shin or shin contusion. He is averaging over his last 2 weeks of action 34 points, 6.3 triples in 8 games, 6 rebounds, 7.6 assists, 1.8 steals, 52 and 93, and 48 from 3. This 2 week stretch, he's started off the season pretty hot, but what he's doing now is out of control good. He hit his 203. This week, or in this game. So he's now, last year he hit 286 three-pointers. He's hit 204 in 42 games. He is going to obliterate that record. And he holds the record most threes, 286. He's got 82 to go in, you know what, 40 games left? He's only got to hit 2 a game. Pretty confident Steph can hit 2 a game, especially when he's currently going at 4.9 per game. He's silly good. Yeah, well, you're pretty happy if you drafted him. I'll leave it at that.
The waiver wire line of the night.
I've been going on about this guy for a little bit of time. Manu Ginobili was incredible against the Lakers, and yes, it was the Lakers. So there's obviously a bump in what he can do there, but 20 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 5 steals, 2 blocks, 2 three-pointers on 9 of 10 shooting. He almost was the monstrous line of the night. There was a few huge performances. Manu is a top 85 player over the last month. And yes, his ceiling is limited because he's not going to play more than 20 minutes a game usually. But if you're playing 20 minutes a game and you're ranked inside the top 85, you should be owned in more than 20% of leagues. And that's currently where he is. In that last month, he's at 10 points. That's not all that good. But 1.2 threes, 3 rebounds, 3.3 assists, 1.3 steals, half a block, 48 and 85 is his percentages. He's hitting 44% of his threes. All this stuff that he's able to do is easily enough value to be owned in every league. Make sure that Manu is owned. If he has an injury, if he has to rest a couple of weeks, you move on from him. But the numbers he's putting up, and for the season, he's at number 100, unless you're in an 8-team league, you can use what Manu can do. You can get those 3.5 assists from a shooting guard, which are not easy to find, at really efficient shooting, good free throws, a steal a game, over a 3 a game. These things are not easy to find. Manu, I've said it a million times, he has to be owned, and he showed it again today with a huge, huge waiver wire performance.
Young gun of the night.
How good's Miles Turner? He's putting up some huge, huge numbers. 28 minutes for Turner, 31 points, 8 rebounds, 1 steal, and 2 blocks on 12 of 17 shooting. He went 7 of 9 from the free throw line. He has to be owned everywhere. Yes, there was no Jan Mahinmi in this game, but I think that even when Mahinmi comes back, Turner has earned himself a pretty solid role. He might take over from Mahinmi. I'd say that's pretty unlikely, but if he doesn't get 23, 24 minutes going forward, I'm going to be very surprised. So make sure that Miles Turner is owned in your league. Sorry for you guys who are watching online. Just had a slight, not really an emergency. I had my son get out of bed and he's just been bitten on the leg by a mosquito. So just had to go and attend to that. So that was the slight delay in the live broadcast. He's all good now. He's back in bed. We are ready to go on and continue where we're up to. I just need to remember where I'm up to in the show. Oh, yes, we are ready for the
dud of the night.
Thad Young was pretty poor for the Brooklyn Nets. 27 minutes for Thad. Just the 10 points, which is not terrible, but nothing else. No threes, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, no steals, no blocks. Missed both of his free throws as well. A guy who's been playing fantastically this season, Thad has dropped off the last 2 weeks. He's only at 13.5, which is down from his season averages of 15.9. 1.5 steals for the season, only 1.1 steals over the last couple of weeks. Shooting percentage is way down, and he's actually a really probably under-the-radar punt free-throw guy. He's only at 59.6 on the season, 50% over the last couple of weeks. Very low attempt, so it can be recovered from. You're not dropping Thad just yet, but I think the loss of Jarrett Jack has actually impacted his play, and he hasn't been as good. He hasn't been able to do the sort of things he was doing earlier in the season. So just hold on to Thad Young now. If someone drops him, I'd definitely go and add him. But this is not a great trend for him at the moment. The way things are currently traveling.
Perfect DFS lineup.
All right, the perfect DFS lineup for Friday. A couple of pretty obvious ones at point guard. Kemba Walker at 69.9 points continues to go crazy this season, and Steph had 69 points as well. Both of these guys are just having out-of-control seasons. Kemba Walker is probably the most surprised. Look, Steph's surprising. He's gone from unbelievable to unbelievably unbelievable. Kemba Walker's been from good and me really liking Kemba as a player to being someone who's a really fantastic fantasy asset and real-life asset who's doing so much for his team. His DFS salary is through the roof, but he continues to exceed value. Not sure how long that's going to continue in terms of when his salary is rising. He's at $8,500. Does he continue to exceed value? That might be a little bit of a stretch for him. Shooting guards, Jimmy Butler, 49.3. It wasn't Jimmy Butler's best game, but he was still pretty solid at 49.3. Can't really go too negative on him there. And Manu at 42.8, who I just talked about. The small forwards, Wes Johnson at 27.1. The Clippers didn't have a huge amount going for them fantasy-wise during the game, but Johnson can have these games out of the blue where he puts up big defensive numbers, hits some threes, gets some rebounds, and that's exactly what happened. He makes really only a GPP play. There's no consistency in his role or his production, but we know that when he does get going, those defensive numbers can come in and they count for a lot in DFS. Chandler Parsons, the other guy, at 37.5. He is, in a seasonal point of view, he's a top 40 player over the last 2 weeks. He's really coming along now. His salary hasn't caught up. He's a fine guy to use. Power forwards, Jared Sullinger put up 46.9. So with Amir Johnson out, we thought that Olynyk and Sullinger would get a boost. Sullinger was the guy who really took advantage. And Miles Turner at 45.6. Another massive game for him. His salary has definitely not caught up to his current role in production. It will, and then his role will probably reduce and make him someone you want to avoid most of the time. At center, Nick Vucevic, 47.4, a career night for him in terms of block shots. He blocked 6, and he put up a big matchup. This was a really positive matchup for him as well. And that sort of lineup would have put you 435.5 points, which is obviously a pretty big chunk of points. All right, next we're going to go into the next segment. Before we do, we're going to take a quick break from our sponsors.
Break it down. Box score breakdown.
Well, yes, we're going to do the box score breakdown now. So I'll bring that up on the screen for you guys. who are watching this video. There we go. It's up on the screen for you there. You can check out the box scores as we go through them. And I'll do the same thing. The first game of the night was the Charlotte Hornets, the undermanned Charlotte Hornets, taking on the Orlando Magic. Game went to overtime on a very, very lucky Victor Oladipo shot. The Hornets got the victory, which, you know, I love because I do like the Hornets. I love the Magic as well, but you know that my distaste for Scott Skiles and what he does with the rotations, I like the one he loses. Although I can't really be too disappointed with what he did with the rotations. We're going to get to that in a sec. Kemba Walker played 46 minutes for the Hornets, 40.7 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals, 1 block, 2 threes. He was stiff, not to get the monstrous line of the night, but that's what happens when Steph Curry plays. Yeah, Curry can go out there and then pass him with a triple-double. He was massive, though. With Cody Zeller out and Nick Batum out, we saw Spencer Hall start. He went for 16-10 with 3 assists, a 3, and a block. We don't know how long Zeller is out at the moment. I would imagine maybe 1-2 more games. So adding Hawes, nice short-term answer. The other guy who I thought would be a good add was Frank Kaminsky, who actually had his worst game in probably the last 2 weeks. He only played 27 minutes, didn't play at all in overtime, 5-6 with a 3 and a steal. I still think that Kaminsky's not a bad short-term add, but Hawes is the guy that obviously they preferred to use him in this one. It might not be the case in the next one, but you know, going back 2 seasons when he was in Philadelphia and in Cleveland, Spencer Hawes was a very, very viable fantasy asset, and he could be the same if he has this role. Just see what you do. It's going to be short-term, though. Marvin Williams was also pretty good. 14 boards, 11 points, 2 steals, and a block. Pretty putrid 3 of 11 shooting, but nice game from him. He hasn't been all that good lately. Jeremy Lin played 30 minutes, 7 points, 4 assists. Not his greatest night. I still think that Lin is worth owning in most leagues. Jeremy Lamb only the 4 minutes because Troy Daniels played 32 minutes. 17 points for Daniels, 3 triples, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Now, I'm not adding Troy Daniels anywhere except for deeper leagues, which he should be added in because he does have an ability to go out and hit threes in big bunches. Even if he plays 10 minutes, 12 minutes, he could hit you 2-3 triples. And that can obviously be really useful in a deep league. But in a standard league, the 32 minutes he got here, I don't really think that's replicable. Onto the Magic, they made a lineup change, a starting lineup change, which Scott Skiles had hinted at before the last 2 games, actually did it in this one. And I like them. I like what he did. So he went with Victor Oladipo and Lord Alfred Payton in the backcourt, Toby Harris and Aaron Gordon as the 3 and 4, and Vucevic as the center, and put my boy Evan Fournier to the bench. Now, I like Evan Fournier a lot, but this is the best starting lineup that the Magic can have. The other way you could do it is maybe put Fournier at the 3 and then put Toby Harris at the on the bench. But this is the best starting lineup for them. This is the best combination of players. It's surprising to me that it took Skiles so long to realize that Alfred Payton and Oladipo could actually play well together when they were dominant towards the end of last season playing together. Oladipo was great, 29, 4, and 3, 5 triples and a steal, and Lord Alfred Payton was 1 rebound away from a triple-double. He went 11, 9, and 10 with 2 threes and a steal. So, hey, who knew that they could play well together? Well, I did, and so did most other people. But apparently Skiles does now as well. Vucevic, 15 and 12, 4 assists, 2 steals, 6 blocks. Huge, huge night from Nick Vucevic, and Toby Harris went 22, 5, and 2 with 2 blocks. I mentioned it yesterday, stacking guys from the Hornets Magic game would have worked out fairly nicely in DFS, and we can see some of these numbers. Now, Aaron Gordon started. He played only 24 minutes because he was in really early foul trouble. He fouled out in those 24 minutes. 10, 7, and 4, hit a 3, hit all of his field goal attempts. He should be owned in every league. He's not going to be amazing. He's not going to be a top 50 player. But he could be a pretty comfortable top 100 guy, I think. He can get the defensive numbers. He can be a triple one sort of guy. He can do quite a number of things on the court. I think the 24 minutes here is a product of the fouls. I reckon we'll see him at 30, 31 in the next game, and that will be obviously beneficial to his value. And Evan Fournier, I wouldn't drop him just yet. He played 33 minutes, had 15 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, a 3, and a block. If he can get 33 minutes off the bench, which why shouldn't he? Because who else should be getting minutes? Should Shabazz Napier be getting 15 minutes? Well, he did in this one, but no, is the general answer. And Mario Hezonja has done nothing to deserve any of Fournier's minutes. Fournier should play, and he should play as the backup 2, as the backup 3. There's definitely room for him to get still 30 minutes. So I'm not automatically going and dropping Evan Fournier, and he's been dropped in a lot of leagues. So, you know, I'm okay with him playing 33 minutes. I think that you can add him, especially if you need some scoring and some three-point shooting. He can be a guy that can have value even in a bench role, which, you know, some people might not realize. The next game, the Utah Jazz and the Brooklyn Nets. Rudy Gobert 29 minutes for him, 10 and 7, 3 blocks, a pretty standard Gobert night. And Gordon Hayward went 21, 4 and 9 with 3 triples and a steal. Of course, no Derek Favors, who's now been day-to-day for the last month, hasn't played in a month, but continues to be day-to-day, so thank you for all that fantastic information, Utah Jazz doctors. Trey Lyles with another start. He played only 24 here, 10 and 5. It's not really worth owning him in a 12-team league. I reckon you can find better options. This game was over so quickly, though, so the minutes are spread out. There's nothing to really gain by looking at what happened with many of these guys. Rod Hood was still good, 16 and 5 in 30 minutes. Hull Neto played 25. Trey Burke played 19. Nothing to really gain from getting too deep into the Jazz's box score. On the Nets, a similar story. Minutes were spread all over the place. Donald Sloan played 25 minutes. He was bad. 2 points. Missed all four of his shots. 4 rebounds and 6 assists. He's still pretty happy with that. But the guy's just not good, and it is going to limit his ability to get close to 30 minutes. So, yes, you definitely own him now. No, you don't necessarily hang on to him, you know, for the rest of the season. That might not last. Joe Johnson, only the 8 points, but was efficient in 25 minutes. 5 rebounds, 4 assists. He should still be owned. Everything else was just a mess. Brook Lopez, only 19 minutes. He can do better than that. So 8 and 3 with 2 steals. It was a mess. The game was a mess. The Nets are a mess. I can't work out who's worse, them or the Lakers. Or the Suns. They're all terrible. The Clippers and the Knicks. Wes Johnson, 14 points, 4 triples, 23 minutes, an assist, 2 steals, 2 blocks. That's what I mean, what he can do. That's not only a triple one, that's a double triple one, plus some extra threes. A really good night from him. He's the guy that should be playing 30 minutes with Blake Griffin out and no one to play small forward. Unfortunately, Doc Rivers doesn't see it like that, so his fantasy value is definitely capped. But yeah, he's a guy who can do that and can. We saw it with the Lakers when Mike D'Antoni was the coach. He was a must-own fantasy player. For as much as people didn't want to believe it, he was. And he can have that sort of role. But Cole Aldrich, he's the backup center. They traded Josh Smith because Cole Aldrich had beaten out Josh Smith as the backup center. He played 18 minutes here, 12 and 5, a steal and a block. And you look at that and you go, oh, whatever, you played 18 minutes, you're a backup center, good on you. Over the last 2 weeks, Cole Aldrich is ranked inside the top 100. Over the last week, Cole Aldrich is ranked inside the top 55. As strictly as a backup, 18 minutes a game, 12 and a half points, 6 rebounds, 1 steal, 1.5 blocks, 56 and 75. Now, do I think you should own him in 12 team leagues? No. But if you're in a 14 team league, you pretty much have to. He's a top 130 player over the last month at 15 minutes a game. Yes, some of them starting, but what did he start? 1, 2 games, maybe, out of those 14? He is a guy that I highlighted in the offseason who has tremendous per 36 value, and if he starts, is going to put up numbers, and was never given a proper go in New York last season when he should have been the starter for all of the season, but for some reason Derek Fisher doesn't know what he's doing. But if DeAndre Jordan goes down, you've got a potential top 50 guy on your hands here with Cole Aldrich. Not grabbing him in 12-team leagues, although I don't hate a stash in a weekly changes or a roto, because as I said, he's putting up value enough to be used anyway. And the upside is significantly high. Significantly. And one could argue, it might be a bad argument, that are the Clippers better off playing him than DeAndre Jordan? Jordan can do some things well. You know, offense isn't one of them. Free throw shooting isn't one of them. He can grab rebounds. He can throw down alley-oops. But is he really? He's better than Cole Aldridge. But you know, Aldridge is carving out value in a limited role. Keep an eye on him. That's probably the best thing I can say. Now, DeAndre Jordan did have 20 points in this one, 7 of 7 from the field, 8 rebounds, no blocks. While Paul Pierce, we'll go with him, 13 points with 3 triples in his 19 minutes. Chris Paul only played 28 in this game. The game was a laugher. It was over quickly. 16, 6, and 13 for Paul with 2 threes and a steal. And not much else to really get us too excited. CJ Wilcox actually played, so that's how much this game was over. On to the Knicks. Again, the game was over, so Jose Calderon only the 23 minutes, and Jerian Grant played 24. 13 points for Grant, a 3, 8 assists. He's showing a lot to me. And I reckon All-Star break, we might see Jerian Grant as the starter, at least maybe in March. I reckon, I'm pretty confident in March we see him playing 27 minutes a night and being a real fantasy relevant player down the stretch. It's not happening at the moment. Calderon will go back to 30 minutes. So Calderon's a guy you own now, but his value is going to expire. Grant's not ownable now, whose value should go up. He's clearly going to be more of the future of this team than what Calderon is, but I think that he has got, you know, quite a bright future. Even the end of this season, he'll start to come up really well. Robin Lopez, only 17 minutes. That's because he got ejected for slapping Chris Paul in the face. A very, very odd ejection. 6 and 7 he had in 17 minutes, so don't look at it and go, oh, Derek Fisher stuffed it up again. This was all Lopez's fault. Mallow went 16, 4 and 6, triple one, a nice night from him. And Derek Williams, another 29 minutes for him with Lance Thomas out, 9 and 7 with a steal. He's not a guy that I'm adding in 12-team leagues, but he's a decent stream option as long as Thomas remains out. Our boy Aaron Aflalo, 5 points in 30 minutes. Can't own him. I can't deal with him in 12-team leagues. And Kristaps
Porzingis,
he struggled a bit. Only 28 minutes, 13 and 8, but where he really hurt, he was 4 of 17 from the field and no defensive numbers. He will clearly be better than that moving forward. The Chicago Bulls and the Boston Celtics, Jimmy Butler, I said it wasn't his greatest game, but he did have a first half double-double, 28 and 14 with a couple of steals, really good in his percentages. So, yeah, maybe I was a little bit harsh when saying it wasn't his greatest game. It wasn't his greatest, but it was still pretty good. And Derrick Rose is quietly getting back to being not peak Derrick Rose, but as good a Derrick Rose as we've seen in the last couple of seasons. 27 and 7, 3 threes, 3 assists for Rose. No steals, no blocks. He's still a back-end guy, but he's a must-own player, and he's looking a lot better. Pau Gasol, he was terrible against the Warriors. Bounced back here, 18 and 11 with 3 assists. And Taj Gibson only played the 23 minutes here. Now, he dealt with foul trouble, so that's the reason. So don't get too into it by looking and saying, oh, okay, they're not playing Gibson. Bobby Portis is getting the minutes. It was foul trouble. 9 and 6 for Gibson with 2 blocks, while Bobby Portis played 18 minutes. Took 12 shots in those 18 minutes, which is quite a lot. Went 4 of 12 for 8 points with 3 rebounds, a steal, and a block. Still not a 12-team league guy. Nikola Mirotic struggled, but at least he played 26 minutes. He went 5 and 5 and had 2 steals and a block, so still some value there. His confidence is shot, but at least, you know, having his confidence shot, it wasn't compounded by Fred Hoiberg going, okay, you were only playing you 14 minutes. They still played him decent minutes, which is an encouraging sign. Let's see where that goes from here. Tony Snell was his usual brand of awful, 2 points in 17 minutes. On the Celtics, with Amir Johnson out, Kelly Olynyk and Jared Sullinger started. Olynyk played 26 minutes for 12 and 9 with a block and a 3. Foul trouble limited him a bit, but he still got the 26 minutes, so I'm happy with that. And Jared Sullinger was massive, 18, 12 and 5, 3 steals and a block. He hasn't been must-own. He hasn't even been really ownable lately, but his potential is through the roof. Now, his minutes are going to come back to 22 or 23 in the next game. There's, you know, pretty much no doubt about that. So that makes him not an overly attractive add. I'm still adding one guy. It's Olynyk over Sullinger. But yeah, he's been super impressive, especially in this game and through stretches of the year. So another game like this, then I'm all for adding him. But he'll be on and off rosters quite a bit, I reckon. Avery Bradley, 21 points, 4 assists, 4 steals and 2 threes. Really getting into a nice little groove at the moment. And Jay Crowder, not his greatest night, but still, 3 steals, 2 blocks. He helps you out in those defensive categories. Isaiah Thomas had 22 points as well, 5 assists and 3 threes. While Marcus Smart killed your field goal percentage. And you know he's going to do it. 4 of 12, 8-5, but with a steal and a block. So still helping in defensive numbers. And he's a guy that can be owned depending on the way that you're structuring your team. The Bucks and the Rockets. Greg Monroe, 4 blocks. Count that as a massive bargain. You're not getting that too often. 21-9 with 3 assists and still only 30 minutes. You can't get that minutes back up to, say, 33, 34. Just really limited at that 30. And that's because they're giving John Henson 18 minutes a night, basically, and they can't play together. Henson went 8-6 and had 2 blocks, and he's just a really great... Well, he's not really great. That sounds terrible. He's a great shot blocker and can really help you in that area. Doesn't do much in too many of the other ones, though. Jabari Parker is really coming on at the moment. 40 minutes he played. I don't think there's much concern about his knee injury in terms of minutes at the moment. 11 and 10, 2 steals, 2 blocks. You haven't been able to get many defensive numbers from him this year, but his last 2 weeks, he's giving you 1.6 steals and 0.6 blocks. And you look at that and go, okay, maybe it's a fluke. But last year as a rookie, he averaged 1.2 steals. So the steals are relatively real. He's a top 75 player over the last 2 weeks. He's at 13.9 points. His rebounding's up. His steals are up. His blocks are up. His field goal percentage is up at 57. He's looking a lot better, and he has to be owned everywhere now. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 18 and 6 with a steal and a block. And Chris Middleton had another 7 assists to go with 21 points and a triple one. So big games from those guys. Good to see if you're a Michael Carter Williams owner that he played 35 minutes. He wasn't great, but 4 of 11, 11 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, still gets it done. You're aware of the percentage issue, so not a bad night overall from Carter Williams. And Jared Bayless dished 6 assists in his 20 minutes. He's more of a 14-team league guy, but could approach must-own 12-team value pretty soon. James Harden for the Rockets, of course, 34 minutes for him, 35 and 8, 5 triples, 2 steals, a good night from Harden, especially from the field where he went 9 of 15. And Terrence Jones, who didn't start, the Rockets went with a smaller lineup. They started Jason Terry, James Harden, Corey Brewer, Trevor Ariza, and Clint Capella. Jones came off the bench for 32 minutes, 14 and 8 with 4 blocks. That's not really exciting me that much where I have to go and add. Look, it's a great line, but I'm not going, oh, I've got to go and add Terrence Jones everywhere, especially with the addition of Josh Smith. Now, Clint Capella only played 24 minutes, but he fouled out. 6 and 9 for him, a steal, 2 blocks, still really useful, but with Dwight Howard back and now Josh Smith in the mix, I'm not sure if Capella's going to be 12-team ownable. Jason Terry started, played 18 or 19 minutes, 6 points with a couple of threes, while Ty Lawson played 28 and went 11-4-2 with Patrick Beverley out. I'm not adding Lawson, despite 2 relatively solid games recently. Corey Brewer on a start, didn't do much. 4, 5, and 4 with a couple of steals, and we can leave him as a deeper league-only sort of player. The Miami Heat and the Toronto Raptors. Chris Bosh in his return to Toronto, or one of his returns, 39 minutes, 26 and 7. The Heat were without Luol Deng, Josh McRoberts, Hassan Whiteside, Beno Udrih, and Goran Dragic. Dragic is going to be out for the next couple of games, so if Udrih's back, he's going to have value. Tyler Johnson's going to have a little bit of value, although he's struggled in most of these games, Johnson. He played 33 minutes here, 4 and 4 with a steal and a block, and another 33 minutes for Josh Richardson. 6, 2, and 4 for Richardson, added 2 steals and a block. I really like him. I like him as a real dynasty prospect for a couple of years down the track. It's not going to happen for him this year, and even in, say, you're in a 20-team league, he's probably not providing enough value to be owned there. But if you're sort of out of contention in a dynasty league and you're looking to build up some future assets, I do really like Josh Richardson. Justice Winslow started with all these injuries. 41 minutes for him, 9 points, all from threes, 8 rebounds and 2 assists. Definitely not encouraging me to go and add him. And Amari Stoudemire played 18 minutes in a start, 8 points and 5 rebounds. Dwayne Wade had 22, 3 and 4 in his 37 minutes, and this team is just beyond banged up. They need some players back badly. The Raptors with the easy victory. DeMar DeRozan, 33-6-4, 4 triples, and 4 triples from DeMar DeRozan is like a minor miracle. He has been incredible. If he and Kemba Walker are not named All-Star reserves, there is a massive problem with what the coaches are doing. Those two guys, the other guy that I really want to be an All-Star reserve is Nick Batum. He might not get it, but if DeRozan and Walker aren't named, I'm going to be very, very disappointed. Kyle Lowry went 15-4-6, 2 threes, 2 steals, and a block, so a good night there. And Jonas Valanciunas, talking about big men who don't normally block shots getting in on the action, Nick Vucevic had 6, Valanciunas had 3, and 13 boards with 3 assists, so a nice night from him. The Damari Carroll position, Terrence Ross played 22 minutes, James Johnson played 27, and Corey Joseph played 20. Ross was the most productive with 13 points and a couple of threes, but it's not enough for us to do anything with. James Johnson, no. Corey Joseph, no. Let's assign them all to 14-team leagues, and that's probably where they stay. Patrick Patterson's hot form has cooled off. 5 points in 24 minutes, while Luis Scola had 12 in their 23, and you can probably leave those guys for the deeper leagues as well. And we saw Bismack Biyombo get a couple of blocks in his 21 minutes. We'll leave him alone for deeper leagues as well. Oklahoma City Thunder and Dallas Mavericks. Kevin Durant, 24-3-7, a steal, 2 blocks, 2 threes, ho-hum. And Russell Westbrook, 16-8-7 with 2 steals and a block. So those guys getting it done as per usual. A very, very Enes Kanter-y line from Enes Kanter. 16-9, no other stats, but 7 of 10 from the field and 2 of 2 from the free throw line. Again, showing you why you want to own him, and then he'll have in the next game a reason why you don't want to own him. Serge Ibaka hit 2 triples in his 38 minutes. Yeah. He's just really been disappointing this season. I think that's fair to say. Just not doing enough. And there's not much to really look at with the Thunder box score, to be honest. Dion Waiters played 35 minutes and scored 13 points. We don't need to own him anywhere. What we do need to look at is, I know Campaign was added in some 12-team leagues. Probably shouldn't be. He probably shouldn't have been, and probably shouldn't be anymore. He's dropped off a little bit. I still really like him, but his shot has stopped falling. He's only shooting 23% over the last week, 36% over the last 2 weeks. And when he was up shooting 44% earlier on, then his scoring was up and he was a much more valuable player. He's still averaging 3.3 assists over the last 2 weeks and 1.5 steals and a three a game. And all that can be useful. But you know, the field goal percentage has taken a hit with Payne. That doesn't change anything with me in terms of what I think of him from a dynasty point of view. I love him. Now, I touched on Chandler Parsons earlier. 26-5-3, 4 triples and a steal. He is going to be, I think he is a top 40 player. He's a top 30, well, he's ranked 31st over the last 2 weeks. I reckon from here on out, we're going to be seeing him as a top 20 player in those last, a top 50 player. In the last 2 weeks, he's at 17.7 points, 2.3 triples, 5.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and a steal on 58% shooting. Now, I think we can think that field goal percentage is going to come down from 58. Probably not going to stick there, but he's a high 40s guy. He's a very low free throw percentage guy in general. He's not a great free throw shooter, but all the other numbers should be pretty good for him moving forward. Darren Williams, 22-2-5, another good night there, and Wes Matthews had 5 steals to go with his 13 points. Dirk was back after a one-game absence, 14 points, 2 blocks, 1 steal, 2 threes, so good to have Dirk back in action. And Zaza Pachulia was limited to just 25 minutes. Maybe he couldn't take all the excitement about almost being named as an All-Star. Hey, I don't know. 25 minutes for him, 4-8 with 5 assists. A guy that I was talking about on yesterday's podcast a bit, and I had someone tweet at me, who the hell are you talking about? And that's Salah Mejri. He played in this game. 8 minutes, he blocked 2 shots, and those 2 shots that he blocked, one was Kevin Durant and one was Russell Westbrook. He's just a name to look out for if means of injury strike this team. He is a real shot-blocking force, and he's a pretty decently talented player. We're talking bottom of the barrel, deep, very, very deep league stuff. But Salah Mejri, if you heard me on yesterday's podcast talk about him and didn't know who I was talking about, go and watch some highlights for this game and watch the two blocks that he had on Westbrook and Durant. You'll see a guy that's who's not afraid to get in there and challenge some shots. The Spurs and the Lakers, LaMarcus Aldridge sat out this one as a rest, and as per usual, the minutes were spread all over the place. The Spurs got a pretty comfortable victory. Danny Green had probably his best game for the season. 12 points, 4 triples, 5 rebounds, 1 steal, 4 blocks. So enticing in 22 minutes. Add him if you want to. But don't, with what's happened so far this season, don't buy into it too much. Again, this was the Lakers, so don't get too excited. Kawhi Leonard, 29 minutes, 18-4-2 with 2 steals and 3 blocks, so really racking him up there. And with Tony Parker back, he only played 22 minutes. Patty Mills played 18 minutes, and Ray McCallum was reduced back to 7. Mills got hot. He had 15 points with 3 triples, but he's only a deeper league sort of player. Unfortunately, Boban Marjanovic only played the 9 minutes. That's a little bit disappointing. 2 points for him and 1 rebound, and there's nothing more to gain from looking at the Spurs. Let's go on to the Lakers. Julius Randle started 12-13, but it's just very misleading when he gets a double-double. Yeah, it's great, and if you've got double-doubles as a category, it's fantastic, but he's just not good. He's just not a good fantasy player, especially. He's an okay NBA player, but I just don't think he's ever going to be a great fantasy player. He just doesn't do enough. He is ranked over the last month 243rd. In the last 2 weeks, he's averaging 9.7 points and 9.9 rebounds. That's a double-double. He's ranked 182nd. It's because he does nothing else. No assists, no steals, no blocks. Poor. Both of his percentages are poor. Now, he can improve both of those things, and he probably will throughout his career, but he's not someone that should be owned in 12-team leagues now, even with Larry Nance out. And when Nance comes back, he might lose 2 to 3 minutes off what he does, and then Randall's not worth using it in most formats. D'Angelo Russell, another 30 minutes for him. 18 points, 3 assists, and 2 threes. He should be owned. Jordan Clarkson, 16 points with a couple of threes, and Lou Williams had 16-4-3 in 32 minutes. So those three guards all putting up nice numbers. Kobe is really, really struggling at the moment. Still don't mind him as a punt field goal percentage guy, but he's really in a hole. 27 minutes for Kobe here, 5 points, 2 rebounds, 6 assists. He looks like he's struggling. He's dealing with shoulder issues, Achilles injuries. He's ranked 293rd over the last 2 weeks. He's shooting 29%. He's only taking 9.8 attempts, which is way down to the 16 that he's been taking, but everything is just falling off at the moment for Kobe. His shooting is just horrific. He's at 34% on the season, and as I said, the last 2 weeks, he's down at 29. If you're not punting field goals, you can't own Kobe Bryant this season. The last game of the night, the Indiana Pacers. Talked about Miles Turner. What about their other rookie, Joe Young, mighty Joe Young? 28 minutes for him, 16-3-8, 1-3, 1 steal. Now, he's not taking over George Hill's role yet, but I wouldn't be shocked if at the start of the 2017 season, that Joseph Young is the starting point guard on this team. He's got a lot of talent, massive steal when they got him in the second round. He's looked really good in the extended role that he's got here. Now, George Hill should be back for the next game. He's not out with an injury. It's a personal issue. Hopefully, he's back soon. But Young has definitely earned himself a place in the rotation. It might only be 3 or 4 minutes, but because we've got no Rodney Stuckey and no George Hill here, which is going to take a lot of those minutes away. But he's shown that he can play and he can handle the pace of the NBA. So he's a deep league dynasty guy, name to watch as well. The Pacers started Solomon Hill, and that has no bearing on fantasy leagues. Jordan Hill also started and played 16 minutes. He's also really limited to deeper formats. And Glenn Robinson III played 31 minutes and didn't do much because he's no good. CJ Miles, at this point, you almost have to drop him. He's only played 24 minutes here, 3-6. He's really fallen off completely. He can be dropped in most sort of formats. And Paul George, 15 shots, 12 points. Not a good performance from PG-13. On the Warriors side of things, it was the usual, guys. We talked about Steph. Draymond went 22-11-2 with 4 steals, and Klay Thompson hit 4 triples for 18-3-5. So big numbers from the main guys. Not much else from everyone else, to be honest. Harrison Barnes struggled, 2 of 10 shooting, 6-11-5. He should be owned, but his ceiling is quite limited. But I've mentioned this a few times. When you get to this point of the season, you're not necessarily looking for massive high ceiling guys. You just want consistent producers, and I think he's going to be a consistent producer. You do want to have a bit of a look who's going to be a breakout second half guy, and there's a few guys that we've talked about, and you can see some improvement happening. But in general, most roles are sort of set. Trades will change it, but most roles are sort of set, and if Harrison Barnes is going to be a top 80, top 90 guy, that's who he's going to be, and that's going to be enough. Same as Manu Ginobili. If he's going to be that top 100 guy, he's going to be that top 100 guy. And it's pretty set in stone. You're not really hoping for a breakout. Second half breakouts do happen, but they're not as commonplace as, say, like a beginning of the season breakout sort of player. Let's hope this guy happens. Like, there's guys now who are working themselves into roles. Aaron Gordon being one of them. Miles Turner being another one of them, who are going to have much bigger second halves. But if you can find a guy like Harrison Barnes who's not projected to really regress and is going to be consistently around that, maybe he's the 11th best player on your team. That's fine. That's okay. That's solid production. And I think that can be useful as well. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk DFS for Saturday. Talking DFS now for Saturday. A couple of games on Saturday have been postponed. The Philadelphia game and the Washington game have both been postponed due to the weather in the East Coast. If you are in the East Coast of the States and you are affected by the storm, hopefully everything is okay and you're staying safe and you're staying warm and you're not trying to go out and drive on roads that are full of snow and causing accidents and risk and that sort of stuff. Hopefully everything is okay for you guys there. If you are living in those areas, and if you are, again, our thoughts go out to you, and hopefully everything is okay, not too much property damage and all that sort of stuff. It'll all be over pretty soon, let's hope. All right, now we're back for the...
Who's winning the match?
DFS preview.
Sure are. The DFS preview. The first game is the Milwaukee Bucks and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans are actually favored by 5.5, which is fair enough because the Bucks have been terrible as well. The total is 205.5 points. OJ Mayo has been ruled out with his hamstring injury. No other injuries to really look at in this one. Jabari Parker at 5,100 has been playing a lot of minutes lately, which is obviously impressive for him, or important for him. Put up 36 in the last game, a 26 average over his last five, and at 5,100, I feel pretty confident that he can maintain 5x value, and against the Pelicans, get a bump, maybe give you 27, 28 points, maybe get you up to 6x value. I think he's a decent guy to look at. On the other Bucks guys to look at, it's not much, to be honest, on the Bucks side of things. Greg Monroe at 7,700, he just feels $500 overpriced on most nights. Now, he's averaging 36. And at 7,700, that's almost at 5x value. The thing that would make me maybe look at Greg Monroe in this one is the fact that it's against the Pelicans, and big men do have big games. So he's not someone that I've been really keen on using, but this is a spot where I can see using him. The thing that also worries me is these minutes. He's only averaging 29 minutes across the last five. Give him 35, and I'm all over it at this price, because he is producing. But there's a little bit of risk involved in it. Giannis Antetokounmpo is at 7,600. That is too expensive. I'm not using him at that salary. Nor am I spending 6,500 on Michael Carter-Williams, despite his pretty decent game in Friday's action. He's just been a little bit up and down. And actually, surprisingly, the Pelicans' defense against point guards has really ramped up. And at the moment, you're not getting many points if you're an opposition point guard going up against the Pels. Chris Middleton's now at 7,400. That's making it a little bit harder to play him. He is averaging 37 across his last five, so you can use him. You know the minutes are going to be there, so he's not a bad guy. He's a pretty safe cash game sort of play, but the salary is now making it harder to use him as an ongoing thing. For the Pelicans, 7,300 for Tyreke Evans. I reckon that's a pretty decent price. He put up 42 in the last game. He played 31 minutes. Hopefully the knee is not bothering him. He can get maybe 34, 35 minutes and give us 36 or 37 points. I think there's a big chance of that. Norris Cole, my boyfriend, 4,300 for him. Not a really positive matchup for him. He did put up big numbers in the last one. So at 4,300, he is worth looking at. But I think his ownership is going to be quite high in a GPP. Also, the percentage of him doing nothing is also relatively high as well. So he probably won't be someone that I put into a lineup. Anthony Davis at 10,300. Love the matchup. The Bucks are terrible against big men. This has got 50 points written all over for AD. So go for it. I've got no issue with it. The last five games, his lowest score that he's had has been 39. All for using him. Jrue Holiday, let's hope he plays more than the putrid 22 minutes that he played in the last game. At 6,400 though, not sure that I want to go and use him. He needs to do a lot more than the 29 he's been averaging over the last five at 6,400 for me to really get too involved in him in any lineups. The New York Knicks and the Charlotte Hornets is the next game. We do not know the status of a few guys in this one, and most importantly, we don't know if Nick Batum's playing or if Cody Zeller is playing. Lance Thomas is doubtful for the Knicks. Batum and Zeller are both questionable. Yeah, obviously, the presence of Zeller impacts guys like Spencer Hawes. If Zeller's out, Spencer Hawes and Frank Kaminsky are both guys that I think we should be looking at. Kaminsky's price, well, he doesn't actually have a price on my list here, so that's not helping me at all. But Kaminsky's price fairly low, as is Hawes, and they both get a bump if Zeller is out. Kemba Walker, he's averaging 57.7 across the last three games. It's a pretty neutral matchup against the Knicks. His salary is through the roof. Well, it has been. I know it's going to be 8,500-ish. So there's no salaries up for this one at the moment. Not sure that I... it's so hard to not use him because he's giving you Steph Curry production at $3,000 less, $2,000 less. Nah, look, you know what? Go for it. I reckon he's pretty worth a look. He has always been good when playing against the Knicks as well, whether in Madison Square Garden or at home. He has had historically put up some big numbers against the Knicks. I'm all for using Kemba. Nick Batum, don't want to use him if he does play. There's not much else that I really love in this one. Maybe Robin Lopez, but the Hornets have been really restrictive against opposition centers, so that limits his use. If Batum is out again, then I'm okay rolling Jeremy Lin out again, even though he's been playing not that well. And you might want to throw something on Troy Daniels, but that would have to be in a GPP-only sort of situation. Memphis and Minnesota is the next game up. The Grizzlies are favored by 3.5. The total is 194. Injuries, well, Marc Gasol is questionable with a knee contusion, and Tony Allen is dealing with hamstring problems. So there's a couple of big, big injuries. If Gasol is out, what do the Grizzlies do? They just signed Ryan Hollins, so that makes me think that you know, Gasol might not play. So we're going to see Zach Randolph at center, and he's at 6,100. He has a little bit of interest, not much, but moving him to center opens up minutes for Matt Barnes at 5,200, who I think is a really good play. Jeff Green as a tournament option at 46, you can look at. But really, as for Grizzlies guys, not much really stands out to me, even though the matchup is fairly favorable. 6,600 for Mike Conley is just too expensive. He hasn't played 30 minutes in either of his two games back. It is a nice matchup for him, but I don't want to spend 6,600 on him. I think the only real value play coming in this game is Shabazz Muhammad, who his minutes are right up there. He's averaging 30 across his last three. He's priced at 4,000. He's giving you a 21-point average at the moment. He's trending in the right direction. And for 5x value, if he gives you 20 points, well, that is 5x value. I think that he is not a bad cheap option to help round out a lineup. I don't want to use Zach LaVine. Ricky Rubio at 6,500 is too expensive against the Grizzlies. Karl-Anthony Towns at 7,700 is interesting. If Marc Gasol is out, I'm all for using Towns. Now, that price is high, but he's averaging 44 points across his last three, and at 7,700, that still smashes value. If Gasol's in, I'm probably more hesitant about using Towns, but if Gasol is out, I'm all for getting him out there and hoping for a 40 or 50-point game even. The Chicago Bulls and the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to be really interesting to see what happens in this one with LeBron and co, with the Cavs, to see what they do in their first game under Tyronn Lue. Kirk Heinrich is out, because I'm sure we all care about that. I think LeBron at 9,600, which is not a big salary, he has historically destroyed the Bulls. He's going to be out there to prove something, new coach, all that sort of stuff. Yeah, especially with the stories coming out from Woj about the way that he's handled himself through this situation, I reckon we could see a big LeBron game against a team that he has historically been very, very good against. So 9,600, he feels like just a real foundation to build lineups around. Kevin Love at 7,200, we don't know how he's going to be used. He was probably misused under Blatt. Maybe he'll be used in a different way. 7,200 with the benefit of playing against the Bulls' weak front court. He is averaging 30. The last two games have been really good lately. Definitely think that he's a guy that we look at. And Kyrie Irving's down at 6,900. I don't mind that price for him going up against Derrick Rose. I think that he is someone that I'd also be relatively confident with using. We need to see what they say about starting lineups. Tristan Thompson, Timofey Mozgov, probably going to leave them both alone. As for the Bulls big men, not a good spot for them. 4,800 for Taj Gibson. Don't mind that salary, but his production has been down for a number of reasons, not just to do with his form, but I'll probably leave him alone. 6,100 for Derrick Rose. Now this is interesting at 6,100. Against Kyrie Irving, he's averaging 31 points. Derrick Rose is not a terrible play here. I think he's a guy whose ownership will be relatively low, and I think that he can put up some nice numbers. 8,900 for Jimmy Butler with an Iman Shumpert matchup. 8,900 is big. It's not a bad matchup, but it depends how you structured your team. There is some value in using Jimmy Butler there. Nikola Mirotic will leave alone. Bobby Portis, maybe we throw into a tournament. Same with Mirotic, but neither of those guys I expect to do a huge amount in this one. The Atlanta Hawks and the Phoenix Suns. Ooh, this could be pretty ugly. There's no spread for this one because we've got a lot of injuries on the Suns' side of things. Mirza Teletovic is questionable. Markieff Morris is questionable. John Lua is doubtful. So there's their top three power forwards. PJ Tucker is questionable after copping a knee to the sternum. And Brandon Knight, I would rule Brandon Knight way more than questionable. He flew to LA yesterday to get a second opinion on his injury, which is not, he's got a groin issue. That's not a good sign. For a team that is terrible, they're not going to want to take any risks on who their best player left is at the moment. They will probably want to improve their draft stock. There is a legitimate risk of a shutdown here for Brandon Knight coming. I don't think he plays in this one. If you're in a standard league, and not talking DFS here, Archie Goodwin should be looked at, and you should look to own him because he was great in the start he had the other day. Historically, he hasn't been good, but they've got no one, like no one else to play. I think that Archie Goodwin is a nice speculative ad in a 12-team league and see what happens with Knight over this next week. As for Saturday, Goodwin at 3,700, one of the plays of the day. He put up 26.6 in the last game. He played 39 minutes. You'd have to think that if Knight's out, which looks like it will be, he's going to have to play close to those minutes again. I really like Archie Goodwin here. And the matchup is not a negative as well. Devin Booker at 4,500. He played a stack of minutes as well. Now, if PJ Tucker plays, that might take a little bit of his playing time away, but it really depends on these other injuries. We might see Tucker and TJ Warren being, you know, forced to play a lot of the four. So Booker's going to have to play, you know, 40, 43 minutes as a shooting guard. I think you love getting him into a lineup. The big men, if everyone's out, like Teletovic, Morris, Lua, if all these guys are out, Alex Len at 4,400, Tyson Chandler at 4,400, both of them are worth looking at. In fact, Chandler's probably worth looking at even if everyone plays. He's averaging 26 across his last three. His minutes have been up. His production's been a little bit better. Both of these guys can be worth using, and the Atlanta front court does allow some points. PJ Tucker and TJ Warren, you could throw them into a tournament. Again, if everyone's out, these guys are going to have to play. Now, not as sold on them as, say, using a Goodwin or a Booker, but there is something there to look at with them. Jeff Teague's at 5,500, but I cannot place any trust in him, even going against this Phoenix team. I reckon we're going to see a minute split with him and Dennis Schroeder again, making both of them really hard to use. The matchup's great, but they're playing 24 minutes apiece. It's going to be hard for them to recover. 5,500 for Teague or 5,000 for Schroeder. I reckon you can probably do better. Paul Millsap is at 8,900, but against the Suns, that doesn't even feel high. He's averaging 43.5 over the last five games. His lowest score's been 33.7. He's almost talking 9,000 for Paul Millsap, but he's been that good that the only thing is maybe they're 30 points up at halftime and he plays, you know, 7 second-half minutes. That might impact him. But otherwise, I like him. I like Al Horford at 7,500. Both of those guys can be really, really impactful here. Not much else. Oh, actually, no. One more thing. Kent Bazemore at 5,100. He hasn't been producing. He's put up 17.9 in the last five, which is nowhere near good enough. But the Suns bump is massive. It's real. He could go for 30 here quite comfortably. I'm very, very happy using Kent Bazemore, even though his recent form hasn't been stellar. The Detroit Pistons and the Denver Nuggets. The Pistons are favored by 3. The total is 206 points. Jameer Nelson is considered questionable with his wrist issue, and Darrell Arthur is currently listed as probable with an adductor issue. So, Emmanuel Mudiay at 5,100. He's played 34 minutes on average across his last three, put up almost 27 points, and at 5,100, I'm all for that. At 5X, he's definitely worth looking at. Other Denver guys, not much to love. Danilo Gallinari is at 6,900, so the salary's come down, but his production's come down, and the matchup is not favorable. And Gary Harris at 4,400, just not really much is happening for him. And again, with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope on you, forget about it. Same goes for Will Barton. He's at 6,300. His production has not been meeting that salary mark. In fact, his highest score in his last five games is just 33, and that would just be on 5X value. Again, not a good matchup for him. The centers, I've got no idea what Denver's going to do. Joffrey Lavernier has been the hot hand. Maybe you look at him at 3,700. He could definitely fit into a tournament. Nikola Jokic at 4,700. Again, he can get really hot and be big as well. None of these guys I want for cash games, but I can understand using them in tournaments. Ken Fareed at 6,400 has been really consistent lately. Now, it's not a good matchup, but with a 33-point average across his last three, I can understand using him. I probably wouldn't, but there is a rationale for doing it. 9,000 for Andre Drummond, Nuggets front court, it leaks fantasy points. This is a 50-point game looking for Andre Drummond. I reckon we can get close to that anyway. He's worth a look. Ersan Ilyasova is someone who struggled in the last game, but has been averaging almost 29 across the last five. 5,700, positive matchup, love using him. And Marcus Morris at 5,100, I'd maybe throw him into a tournament. Reggie Jackson at 69, that salary's come down, so that's looking a little bit appealing. But the way he's been playing, and in a couple of recent benchings, he's been playing okay, but he hasn't been putting up big DFS numbers. He's averaging just 28 across his last five. I am fairly confident you can find a better point guard with an eight-game slate on. The Portland Trail Blazers and the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, the Lakers are bad. The Blazers are favored by 10.5. The total is 205. But with a team that's not good playing the Lakers, maybe the risk of blowout's not quite as high. So you can look at guys on Portland and go, yeah, we've got a lot to like here. I think that a lot of the big men are worth throwing into tournaments. Myers Leonard at 4,000. He put up 24 in the last game. That's 6X. And against the Lakers, he could do it again. Ed Davis at 4,200. Revenge game factor for Davis. Not all that keen on using him. But I do like Mason Plumlee at 5,300, who's averaging almost 27 in the last five. He's someone to look at. And Al-Farouq Aminu at 5,100 also should get a significant bump. And he put up 27 in the last game. Dame Lillard at 8,700 has been a bit down. Only averaging 25 in the last three games. Couldn't ask for a better matchup, though, for Lillard. Salaries dropped to 87. He could get 44, 45 points here, and you wouldn't think it's not too much of a stretch. And same with CJ McCollum at 7,700. Again, form has been a little bit down, only a 28 average across his last five, but if he was to put up 40 in this one, would you be shocked? I wouldn't be. Julius Randle, for as bad as he is for sort of standard leagues, in a DFS situation, he's not terrible. At a 5,500 salary, he's averaging 28 across the last three, 26 across the last five, pretty decent floor, not a bad matchup, and if Larry Nance is out, which I expect him to be, then Randall's not a bad DFS play. I also don't hate D'Angelo Russell at 5,100. He's probably more of a tournament, but a McCollum Lillard backcourt is not going to do a massive amount to slow him down. Alan Crabb, he's at 4,500, but he hasn't been producing lately. The matchup is really positive, so maybe you throw him into a tournament and see how it goes. And Lou Williams at 5,800, that salary is just too high for me now, so that's not a good spot. And 5,800 for Jordan Clarkson, exactly the same thing as for Lou Williams. The last game of the night is the Indiana Pacers and the Sacramento Kings. There is no spread that's been released for this one because we do not know if Rudy Gay is playing. He's dealing with that heel issue. If he is out, Omri Caspi becomes a great play. He's at 5,500. He put up 31 in the last game, and you'd be pretty confident that he could get close to 30 again. If Mahinmi's out, Miles Turner's at 4,200, almost an absolute must play at 4,200. He's averaging 37.9 across his last three games. Even if Mahinmi's in, I reckon you have to go and look at him. And you can get another, and this is what's been happening lately as well. You've seen a trend with a lot of the perfect lineups is big men. The cheap value comes from big men, and your high price point guards give you a lot of value. And that's been happening as a relatively consistent trend. So throwing a guy like Miles Turner at power forward or Willie Cauley-Stein at center, who's at 4,100 and averaging 26, it could be really big keys to putting up some nice numbers. Now, the Indiana front court's a bit of a different situation for Cauley-Stein. Might restrict him a bit, but I think at his salary, he can easily exceed 20 points. Boogie Cousins, 11,100. That's pushing the friendship. That's a little bit high. Yes, he's a 52-point average across his last five. Yes, he's high. His lowest score has been 43 in his last five. 11,000 is quite expensive. Now, it depends if you're throwing guys. Like, if you've got Miles Turner in there and a couple of other cheap options around Devin Booker, Archie Goodwin, you might be able to afford DeMarcus Cousins. And you could easily do that. But it's quite expensive. Paul George at 8,800. It's a real positive matchup for him. His form has been down a bit. This has got a 40-point potential here for Paul George. Not all that keen on using him, but if Rudy Gay's out, I'm probably a little bit keener. George Hill at 5,800. If he doesn't play, then we do have to look at Joe Young, who's averaged 26.8 across the last three, put up 31 in today's game, and he's at 3,800. You'd have to look at using him if George Hill happens to be out again. 8,200 for Rajon Rondo, no thanks. 6,300 for Monte Ellis. If George Hill's out, that becomes an okay thing to look at as well. And 7,500 for Rudy Gay. If he plays, I'm all for using that. He's averaging 37.3 in his last three games. And at 7,500, that's bang on 5x. I think he's a pretty solid play if he happens to play, which obviously we don't know yet.
DFS Picks of the Day.
At point guard, Archie Goodwin, 37. Not Goodwin, Goodwin, 3,700. Emmanuel Mudiay, 5,100. And Damian Lillard, 8,700. At the shooting guard spot, Devin Booker, 45. Kent Bazemore, 51. And CJ McCollum, 7,700. Small forwards, Shabazz Muhammad, 4,000. Al-Farouq Aminu, 5,100. And LeBron James, 9,600. Power forwards, Miles Turner, 42. Jabari Parker, 51. And Anthony Davis, 10,300. And at center, Willie Cauley-Stein, 4,100. Mason Plumlee, 53, and Andre Drummond, 9,000. We are done for today's podcast, guys. Make sure you are following me on Twitter at redrock_bball, and that you are following Basketball Monster at Bask Monster. Check out, of course, basketballmonster.com and hardwoodproxism.com. And if you've got 5 minutes spare, leave a review for this podcast on iTunes. It is greatly appreciated. It goes a long way when I'm having discussions with sponsors and bringing on people to help support the podcast, when I can point them to the reviews and go, look, people like it. People actually enjoy this. And they think my dickheadedry is humorous or entertaining or knowledgeable. And I find that amazing that people actually want to listen to this show, but you do, and you put it out there for everyone and they see it, and it helps the show grow and grow and grow, which I'm truly, truly grateful for. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.